The free college movement is not an official thing. It's made up of probably over 200 local communities and community colleges, as well as more than a dozen states that have created their own tuition-free college programs.
That's Michelle Miller Adams, and I'm Dan Skinner. This is Conversations. Michelle Miller Adams is a senior researcher at the W.W. Upjohn Institute for Employment Research and a professor of political science at Grand Valley State University. She's the author of two previous books and also consults with states and cities about the free college movement. She joins us to talk about the path to free college in pursuit of access, equity, and prosperity. Michelle, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Dan. I'm glad to be here.
Well, before we dig into some specifics in this book, give us an overview. What are readers going to find here?
A variety of things. I have been following what we can call the free college movement for about 15 years now, and I've been a little bit in the weeds. This has been my opportunity to kind of come up to a higher level of generality and take a high-level look at what's been going on. We've seen a lot of innovation at the local and state level, and we've recently seen some national proposals around creating a tuition-free path to college. And I wanted to just try to make sense of all of that. There's a little bit of history, there's some data, but it's, again, a high-level take about how we got to this moment and where it will possibly lead.
When you use that term, free college movement, I imagine that means different things to different people. I know what pops into my mind when you say those words, but what do you mean by it?
Well, you're right. It means a lot of different things to different people. And one of the key arguments of the book is that people come to this project of making higher education affordable or even free for different reasons. So there are chapters in the book that talk about the rising price of college and how this addresses that problem. It talks about equity challenges and some longstanding gaps in terms of who goes on to higher ed and where they go and what kind of degrees they get. And it talks a lot about the economy as well and workforce needs that can be met by making higher education more accessible and affordable. But when we talk about free college, two things are important to note. Obviously, it is not free to deliver a post-secondary education. So what we're really talking about here is who is going to pay for it? Is it going to be a public investment, or is it going to be something that's borne by individuals? And I think it's also important to say that when I use the term college, it's a shorthand for a whole range of post-secondary education and training programs, including some very short-term skills-oriented certification, vocational tech training type programs. So we're not saying that this path is one that leads for everyone to a bachelor's degree.
So when we're talking about free college, do you mean free college for everyone, or are you talking about specific groups of potential students that might not normally be able to afford access to higher education?
The free college movement is not an official thing. It's made up of probably over 200 local communities and community colleges, as well as more than a dozen states that have created their own tuition-free college programs. And one of the very challenging but enjoyable aspects of studying these programs as a field is that they're all different from each other. So many of these programs are what I call universal, meaning that they're available to everyone, but there are still limitations. Usually you need to live in a certain place for a certain amount of time. Most of these programs are oriented toward recent high school graduates, although there are a growing number of programs that serve adults that don't have college degrees. And probably the most expansive population that we can talk about is the group that would be served by President Biden's recent proposal as part of his American Families Plan, which is a truly universal path to a two-year degree or other programs offered by two-year colleges for everyone who doesn't have a college degree, whether they're a recent high school graduate or adults. Even that, though, would be constrained by whether states buy into this program. What the president proposed is a shared federal-state program, so states would need to choose to participate to be able to access the federal funding that will be on the table.
What can you tell us about this idea that Biden is proposing in how it is perceived politically? Is this something that could enjoy bipartisan support, or is it going to be yet another issue that continues to be divisive?
Well, there will be a lot of division because everything these days generates a lot of division. But this is a proposal that's structured in such a way that it could draw bipartisan support, and that was done very intentionally. And the reason we know that is because these statewide free college programs have been created with bipartisan support in many states. In fact, the leader in the state level free college movement is Tennessee. It wasn't bipartisan. It's a very Republican state. It was created with a Republican governor, by a Republican governor, with a Republican legislature. In Michigan, last fall, our Republican legislature provided funding for a free college program proposed by our Democratic governor. They agree on very little. And that was a program to serve adults. This proposal of President Biden, which focuses on the two-year community college sector, is driven at least in part by the idea of providing more skilled workers and providing workers with more valuable degrees and credentials for greater success in the workforce. And that is a structure that, in states at least, has been shown to draw bipartisan support. It also has some important equity components because by focusing on the community college sector, that sector disproportionately serves first-generation and low-income college goers. And that is also a priority for the administration. So I think there's a path to quote my own title. I think there's a path to getting this passed. It's a narrow path because the administration is navigating both to try to achieve some bipartisan support, but also negotiating with folks within its own party that are pushing for a more expansive plan that would cover four-year colleges as well.
As these programs are being developed, we know that equity and equality are not always the same thing. So how do you think these programs would address those issues?
Yes, that's always a tricky issue because you can offer equal opportunity, but you don't necessarily get equitable outcomes from that. And of course, whether these free college programs are going to really support equity is going to depend a lot on their design. So who are they structured to reach? What options do they give those students in terms of where they can go to college and what they can study? How much money is on the table? And I'll give you one example. A very small number of these free college programs, including the one where I live in Kalamazoo, called the Kalamazoo Promise, are what in the financial aid biz are called first dollar programs. The scholarship is applied to a student's tuition bill first. And then those students who are low income, who have access to federal financial aid in the form of Pell Grants, can still access their Pell Grants, which of course helps them pay for living expenses and the other costs, the opportunity costs of going to college. Most free college programs are not structured that way. And that includes Tennessee's and this Michigan program I mentioned. They are structured as last dollar programs. And what that means is that students are required to use their Pell Grants first, and then any unmet need is covered by the scholarship, and it covers tuition only. Now, it should be clear that's a much cheaper way to run one of these programs because you're basically building it on top of federal financial aid. And politically, that's been very important. But it is a problem for low-income students because they then don't have those Pell Grant resources to help them pay for their living expenses. So a first dollar structure, like the kind we have here in Kalamazoo and a handful of other places, and importantly, this is what the president has proposed, that it would be a scholarship first and you would still have access to your Pell Grants. That's going to have far more equitable outcomes than the last dollar model, which dominates the field.
You mentioned earlier that one of the issues that needs to be figured out is who pays for this. So given the programs that are currently existing, what is the funding like for those programs and How do you see this might develop in the future?
Yes. There are quite a lot of models in place right now because you have this tremendous variation across communities. In some places, well, Kalamazoo is unusual. Our program is paid for by a group of anonymous private donors. In some communities, it's the largest employer that is funding the program. There are some state funds involved in these programs. The Tennessee Promise and Tennessee Reconnect are paid for out of lottery proceeds. They have a very, very successful lottery in Tennessee that provides a lot of educational funding. When we're talking about a federal program of the kind that the president proposed, that would be paid for out of federal resources, out of taxes and borrowing, and the resources that would go to pay for all of the other proposals in those various infrastructure and recovery plans. So large-scale public funding is not the dominant model at the community level when you have community-based free college programs, but it would be required to move this program to a national scale. And I think it's really important to say that we need to think of this as not just kind of sending money down the drain. This really should be talked about as an investment strategy. Because if you make it possible for more people to go on to post-secondary education and training, those people are going to earn more money, and they're going to be more productive, and they're going to pay more in taxes. And there are long-term returns to higher education that more than make up for its cost. And that's why, of course, so many people pursue it, even though it's expensive.
As you mentioned, the Biden proposal focuses on two-year colleges, community colleges. But I was wondering about the potential impact on colleges and universities if this were available, you know, universally throughout the United States, because the cost of going to one university versus another varies widely. And I'm wondering what kind of impact that might have on the universities themselves.
Right. And there is concern, and it's well-founded concern, that a program that only pays for two-year colleges would divert some students from their four-year college path, which might not be the best thing for them. And we did see some evidence of that in statewide programs in Tennessee and in Oregon, although the four-year sector recovered fairly quickly. And a sizable fraction of the students who go on to two-year colleges will end up transferring on to four-year institutions. I think in the short term, this would be challenging for the four-year public sector of higher ed, and their designated lobbyists and advocates are making that clear. Another important point is if you're going to be steering a lot more students to community colleges, you need to make sure that those community colleges have the resources to support them and not just, you know, be able to provide enough classes or enough classrooms, but actually provide student support so students have support in navigating their way through college and in completing their degree. We want to make sure that whatever is created, whether it's at the state, local, or federal level, it's not a let's make it free to go to college program. The goal is to get students through college with some kind of high-value degree or credential.
Well, there's a lot of information in this book that we haven't had the chance to touch on in this brief interview. So a two-part question for you. One is, what do you hope that readers will take away from this book? And if they support this idea, what can they do?
I hope that readers will take away from this book an understanding that free college is not a radical idea, that it is an idea that returns to an earlier period in the U.S. when higher education was affordable and accessible. And I hope they'll also understand that the design of these programs matters. So people come to this free college idea for different reasons, and it's really good to be clear about what those reasons are, because there's kind of a mess, the whole field of this Promise program design, and we really can do better. In terms of wanting to support this movement, there are a variety of ways to do that. There are some national advocacy organizations that are discussed in the book. You can join and contribute to those. There's one called RISE, which largely is student voices. There's one called College Promise. There's one called the Campaign for Free College Tuition. You can find them all online. They would love donations. They would love membership. And you can also speak to your legislators at the state and national level and share your support for this idea. It is a very politically popular and also potent idea. And there's support for the idea of making higher ed affordable and accessible again that runs across the political spectrum. And especially with legislation being introduced in Congress and starting to think about how to translate the president's ideas into actual law, it's important that your representatives hear from you.
The book is The Path to Free College in Pursuit of Access, Equity, and Prosperity by Michelle Miller Adams. Michelle, thank you very much for talking with me today.
Thank you so much, Dan. I really enjoyed it.
You'll find more interviews on a wide variety of topics at kansaspublicradio.org/conversations. You can use the KPR app to listen on your phone or tablet. You can sign up for the Conversations podcast on iTunes. And you'll also find us on Facebook. Conversations is a production of Kansas Public Radio. I'm Dan Skinner. Thanks for listening.